Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. What's up? Thursday? Gosh, it's nice outside. It feels like football weather. Hitman is here. I'm here. Lucas Panzeca is here.
Yes, Panzeca.
I'll tell you who wasn't practicing today. He wasn't here either. Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz not practicing today.
We didn't want him practicing.
Not practicing. I was going to ask you this. Let me just ask you this because we're sitting here and we have microphones. I'll ask you this. And then Shane Bowen also talked about it today. If you're going to play a team and you honestly don't know who the quarterback is going to be, how did you prepare for that?
You prepare for the offense.
Okay.
Because you got to think that the quarterback, whoever's in, is going to run their offense. So it's their offense. I mean, he's just a distributor. He may distribute it a little bit differently than the starting quarterback, maybe because of his attributes here, that he's got a bigger arm, so he maybe goes downtown a little bit more. But it's the offense and how their plan of attack against your style of defense.
Yeah.
So that's what you really look at. Now, if it's a real young quarterback, you may change a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you're attacking their offense. Because the coordinator hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
See, remember I said I used to have a book on all the different coordinators and how they run their offense. Didn't matter who was the quarterback, mostly. Now, get these elite quarterbacks.
You told me about
that,
too.
It changes a little bit, because these elite quarterbacks change a little. They got some special talents.
Well, you've told me that even when a coordinator switched teams, you're like, he still runs the same thing.
Yeah, he's running the same thing. He may add some things along the way as you get the different staffs. And they say, we should do this when we get in it, So, you kind of evolve as you go. But, no, I think you're going to attack their offense.
How much different are you? Because you mentioned you might do some stuff for a younger guy. How much do you try to fool a younger guy versus, some vet quarterback that you've seen over and over and over again? So let's say it's Jacob Eason. The Titans he's never played against the Titans. Would you try to do a little bit more on defense? Like, let's see what this guy knows and doesn't know. Let's test him a little bit.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Yes, you're going to try to confuse him and do some things maybe he hadn't seen, but you're, running your coverage and your defense. You don't change your defense because of a young quarterback, but you do disguise a little bit more, see if he addresses it and sees it and understands how you plan of attack. Yeah, I love that stuff, because you're playing the cat and mouse game, and if you catch him, man, it's like, you're like, oh, man, how did he throw to that guy? He just threw it right to you. Typically, I dropped him, but.
You got clubs on your hands. Disgusting.
I just dropped it. Threw it right in my bread basket. Boom. But, so that's always fun as a safety because you're playing the mind games and they're watching you as indicators on the coverages. So some are better at it than others. That's why a lot of these guys are going to the Hall of Fame. Brian Dawkins, Troy Polamalu, Ed Reed. I mean, these guys would line up on the line of scrimmage and then run a hall button. They have deep middle. I wasn't doing that. I may have done that every now and then, but I was not doing that. There's no way. You got to be a special gift. You got to be super confident and really a special talent. Yeah.
Shane Bowen, who doesn't have a beard anymore, by the way, apparently he has like a 4-year-old daughter, and his wife had an intervention and told him no more. You got to get rid of that thing. Mm. So he cut his beard. So a beardless Shane Bowen met the media today. He talked about what the Titans are doing to prepare for. And we'll tell you a little bit about this in a second. Not one, not two, but three Colts quarterbacks. This was Shane Bowen earlier today.
We're playing a familiar opponent. They've kind of always have done similar things. The quarterback has changed them from Brissett to Rivers. It has changed a little bit in that regard. I think you got to prepare for all of them. Like, our guys better have an idea about all of them, just their skill sets and kind of where this thing might trend to come Sunday, depending on who's playing. But at the same time, like, we got to prepare to freaking play the other 10 guys as well, right? Like, they have their scheme. I don't know if it's going to just be a wholehearted change, but more importantly, we just got to know who these quarterbacks are and how we can ultimately affect them and understand potentially what we might get differently from each of them.
Like him saying something that a lot of times you just get caught up in who the quarterback is. He goes, we're going to prepare for the other 10 guys too.
Yeah, yeah. He did finally say that, yeah.
We'll go ahead and prepare for the other 10, not just the quarterback.
Yeah. I would kind of lean on you're going – what I said earlier, really. You're playing – now, granted, every quarterback, as I said, that they do a little bit things different. Like when he used Phillip Rivers, it was a good testament that say, okay, they may do things a little bit different. Veteran quarterback, and arms not as big, So you say you may do some little things there, but ultimately the base of their offense is still the same.
Yeah.
They just operates a little bit differently. And you're not going to learn that until you actually play the teams. I mean, you know, you can't go back and look at Hundley when he was at Green Bay. It's a different offense.
Yeah.
So you want to live by what they usually do, especially against you and your style of defense. And then you adjust along the way or emphasize more so what they're doing, more so with that quarterback. It could be they're trying to go downtown more. Maybe there's more intermediate route guy. Maybe he's a dump off to the running back guy. You know, just get everybody in and just, boom, I'm getting rid of it. I don't want to hold on to this thing. So, but, yeah, ultimately, it's the Colts. It's a division game. They know you. You know them. It's about execution, really, at the end of the day. Do your job. Be good open field tacklers. And the Hines kid, you gotta show him. They got to put a special package in for him, to me. And I don't think they really do a good job of it. I think he impacts the game more than we give him credit for, at least against the Titans. Guy's a really good route runner out of the backfield. So you want that kind of tweener guy that can cover him in space, but yet can they keep him in the backfield and they don't split him out. He can play in the run front. So that's, you know, it's always tough to do. Got a nice little contract, so they understand his value.
Yeah, and he's I mean, we've talked about this a little bit this week with Nyheim Hines. He literally had a game last year. It was on his birthday where they tried to pull him out, and he weighed them, no, I'm not coming out. He was he wouldn't leave the field at one point.
Because, talking against the Titans. It was here, wasn't it?
Yeah. And he was having too much fun. No, man, it's my birthday.
He was impacting the game. It was crazy. He was, you know, Mac was the starter then, and he was kind of the rotational guy. And I love how they implemented and shared the time and how they split it up. It was really good, and it's hard to do. And then how he was impacting the game. And I was like, hey, man, they need to keep that kid in there. If he stays in, he's going to dominate because he could run in between the tackles. I don't know. People must think he can, but he sure does every time against the Titans. So, I have a lot of respect for him because he's a tough cover. And he's hard to see. And he's a quick, darty guy. He's a different player. I'm trying to think of, like, who he would be, but it may be a faster the Lewis kid we have here.
Oh, Deion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe the younger version of him when he still had a little bit more hops.
Or you could even say his first year.
Yeah.
I don't think the Titans, I thought they did a disservice in implementing him correctly. Mm-hmm. That's why I talked about the balance of using a guy like that. It's hard to don't use him too much or use him a little bit, you know, here or there. Or how do you get that balance? They have it figured out with the Colts, with Hines. Yeah. They do. It's hard because Lewis was never going to be your guy. So ultimately, the Titans try to make him the guy. He's not that kind of player. He's a good change of pace guy. Mm-hmm. So that's what you want. And so when to implement him and how much you want to use him based off of, I think the Titans were looking at how much they were paying him. And they go, well, we got to use him more.
He got to run between tackles some.
Mm-hmm.
Blaine mentioned Brett Hundley. Here's reporting today from Tom Pelissero. He says, in Indianapolis today, this was a thing that happened. Yeah. Brett Hundley took the majority of the starter reps in practice Wednesday, it says, and he and Jacob Eason may both play against the Titans. So it could be Jacob Eason or Carson Wentz, who didn't practice. Carson Wentz did not practice today. That was a note from yesterday. Or Brett Hundley. So they have one of three quarterbacks that it could be. That's kind of why I ask you. Not one, not two, but three different guys. We did look at Brett Hundley. He started 9 games in Green Bay, but that was 2017 when he did that. And as Blaine pointed out, it's a completely different system. So this is 4 years later.
Well, here's what I want everybody to keep in perspective and don't get caught up in the 1, 2, 3 quarterbacks. When the starter gets hurt, did you prepare for the backup quarterback? Nope. No, you didn't. No, because you prepared to play that offense.
Right.
See, so there's a reason why he was a backup. You think he's not as good as the other one. But that doesn't mean he doesn't do certain facets of his game better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you have to stick to playing your offense. Now, if it's a dynamic running guy and it's a total different type of player, now that's a little bit different.
Right.
But if I'm, you know, Bowen, it's probably my mindset. It's probably would go back and watch him at Green Bay when I got bored on Fridays when it's a half a practice. Mm-hmm. I'm probably watch about 5 games. So I'd have a real good feel, okay, how does this guy operate? Even though it was a different system. Mm-hmm. Just so I can have eyes and see him actually play mm-hmm. in a live game and when it mattered. But other than that, I'm sticking with that offense. That's what he's going to run because that's what Wright is going to tell him to run. That's what he's going to run. Now, so he's not like he's a big-time runner. Now, he can maneuver in the pocket. He's a solid player. So, yeah, I think I would put him in the category of, Brissett. So those guys are solid. They can win games.
Well, Colts have brought a bunch of different dudes in here at quarterback and won with them. So we'll keep.
He's got a great supporting cast.
He does. Offensive line needs to play better up there. But
don't mess it up, Mickey.
I'm not going to mess it up. By the way, I can't mess this up. We got to take a break because Coach Doug Matthews is just chomping at the bit to get in here. Talk Vols and Gators. That's next on Blaine and Mickey. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Man, Thursday afternoons are fun because we get coached up. We get Coach Mack on Tuesday. We get Coach Matthews on Thursday. Coach Doug Matthews joins us now. I'm always interested, Coach, when I talk to Tennessee fans because I like to ask them, who's your rival? And people of a certain age say Alabama, and then people of another age say Florida. So at least about half of the Vol fan base ought to be pretty fired up. They're all fired up. But it's interesting who views whom as their rival with Tennessee.
Age group, I think. Tennessee did not play Georgia or Florida regularly until 1992 when we went to division play.
Right.
I was there the whole decade of the 80s, and you go back well before that, it was always Auburn and Alabama. Normally, Tennessee would play Auburn first and then Alabama. And if you didn't beat one of those – and usually two of those, you weren't in the conference championship race. So and vice versa. Those are the two big ball games. Certainly,
You just got to beat Alabama and Auburn every year, Coach. That's no big deal, right? If you want to have a great season,
it's a little bit easier now to beat one of them than it was the other one. It's pretty darn difficult to beat those guys down in Tuscaloosa.
I know it's Florida week, but you mentioned Tuscaloosa, and I'm sure we'll talk about him a lot coming up. But what Nick Saban has done and continues to do, I saw somebody complaining because they said NIL, that people making money off their likes would tip the scales for Alabama. Hey, I got news for you, buddy. The scales are already tipped. They get whoever they want.
He has that unique ability, and I've gone back and watched him for years now, even before he got to Alabama, LSU, every place he's been, really. He's a forward thinker. He does things like I guarantee you he's been on top of name, image, likeness longer than anybody else. When we first started going to the analyst 10, 12 years ago, he was the first to do that. He looks ahead and he stays on top of things. He was the first defensive coach to realize, hey, we got to start playing a little bit of offense, change that.
Right.
And you put on top of that, it's a great traditional program. They're going to draw players just because of that. But the way that he evaluates, Blaine and I were just talking before we went on the air about some of the guys. Josh Jacobs is a great example out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Heck, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma didn't even recruit him. Alabama sees him, brings him in, and look what he's doing, or what he did.
But yeah.
First
anyway, he's a he's a top quality coach. I think the most amazing thing about him to me is that he can flip that switch on Sunday and get right back into whatever the win is. He's right back into that next week, and his players play like that. And I think for the rest of the league, probably the worst thing could have happened that happened last Saturday. Mm-hmm. They had a close ball game. It's one of those deals. I had a good Alabama buddy of mine said, Florida buddy of mine said, we almost beat him. And I said, there's a bunch of them out there that almost beat him.
I can't imagine what the first practice was when they had on pads this week, what it was like as a player. Ooh. Oh, I bet he was lit out there. Oh, man. How does he do it? How does he say that? You said he can flip the switch the next day whenever they go into practice. How does he do it at this age and with all the success that he's had? Because he feels like he's not slowing down at all.
Blaine, I don't know. He's, 69, I believe. You think back, the guy Meyer, who everybody looked up to, and certainly I did, was Coach Bryant. He was out of coaching at 69. Matter of fact, I think he passed away at 69. But he somehow does it. He obviously loves it. He's the way he continually has staff turnover. I mean, every year he loses maybe two coordinators, But he's got a system. He believes in it, and the players believe in it, and he's doing pretty well right now.
Well, on to the, I guess, to the swamp is where Tennessee will be at. And I saw this one stat, and I bet you remember this game. Tennessee hadn't beat them since 2003 in the swamp. Is that true? Do you remember that game?
I remember when they beat them down there, but I don't remember what year it was. I think they've like, what, lost one in the last 15 years or something like
right.
that?
I think they've 15 of the 16.
They've lost 15 of 16.
Yeah. Tough place to play.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's been a tough place to play for them when they play them in Knoxville. I will say this, though. There was two or three years going back to the almost. There's a couple of games, maybe three in Knoxville, where Tennessee, one in Florida, I was there, had a great opportunity to win, and Florida found a way, particularly the last one down in Florida. You know, they had four fourth down plays, including a 15-yard a pass turned into fourth 15 turned into a touchdown. But Florida has a way of winning down there, and even when the teams are pretty evenly matched, Florida has a way of winning, and that's what Tennessee has to overcome. They got to figure out how they can beat Florida. Now, this year, Florida's got a better football team. But we all know if you go down and you can stay in the game, one of the things, if you go back and look over the years of Southeastern Conference football, particularly teams that are relatively close, almost every game goes into the fourth quarter. So the object on the road is always to get into the fourth quarter. And if you get into the fourth quarter with a chance to win, who knows what's going to happen, a fumble punt, a block punt, you know, a tip pass, something like that can turn the proverbial tide, so to speak. But that's what you try to do. You try to stay in ball games. And if there was ever a true axiom or maxim in Tennessee lore, you got to play every play to the last play of the game, because you just don't know when one of those plays are going to happen. And that's what Tennessee's going to have to do here. Florida's a little bit better. Maybe a good bit better. But Tennessee playing well enough, playing really well on defense. Mm-hmm. The one thing that we've seen out of Florida now, they don't throw the ball like they used to. Now, they run it exceptionally well.
Sure do.
Particularly with the quarterback. Mm. But running quarterbacks are easier to defend than passing quarterbacks. So, you know, we'll see. And I'm anxious to see what Coach Heupel is going to do. Essentially, offensively, he's done very little as far as different schemes. On offense, they pretty much run two or three plays, most of them inside. I think we'll see exactly what his offense looks more like. I don't know if Tennessee, though, has identified yet, Blaine and Mickey, who their playmakers are. Mm-hmm. You know, who are the guys that can make plays defensively? Kicking game, I think they know, but
sure.
Who are those guys on offense? Their two tight ends have caught 15 passes. That is, you know, by far leading the team.
Yes.
And while it's important to have tight ends catch passes, that's not the way you beat good teams.
Right.
They got to find somebody outside. They got some chances, some folks out there, some body, but they got to get that ball to those playmakers. And I think we'll see what Coach Heupel's offense really is this week, because they'll have to pull out all stops to win this game.
Well, if both quarterbacks are healthy, who do you think he's going to go with, and who would you go with?
Boy, I don't know. Here's what I don't know.
You see this today, Coach? He said he's leaning just towards playing one guy. That's Heupel said.
In his mindset, if you listen to him all the time, I think that's where his mindset is always at, is to just play one guy. That's why Bailey didn't get in a blowout till the fourth quarter.
Well, and the thing about this team, Milton Milton in particular, but certainly him and Hooker, both they're both similar players. I mean, it's not like you're going to get a different look from one to the other. I don't know. I haven't asked him. Don't know if he'd tell me. I don't know what his feeling is about an injured player that misses a game. Does he get his spot back when he comes back? He's not said. My guess is he'll probably go with Hooker, but it's just strictly a guess. If he goes with Milton, it means that he really believes that the first couple of games – the overthrown passes, because if there will ever be a game that Tennessee will need to hit deep throws, it'll be this ball game. It'll be this game. It'll be Georgia and it'll be Alabama, because all three of those teams are going to play that bump man coverage outside. They're not going to give any help, and they're going to stop everything, clog up everything inside. And if Tennessee cannot hit deep passes, kind of hit some of those splash plays long, they'll be playing uphill all day. I'd never say they don't have a chance because there's always ways you can win ball games. But they've got to be able to hit some deep throws. They got some players who can do it. Milton has not shown he can do that yet. But if they go with him, you know, I was asked a little earlier, Coach Mack and I were taping coach to coach, and one of the questions was, why do you think he went with Milton the first game? Well, it's simple, because in preseason practice and in scrimmages, he was the best guy in Coach Heupel's eyes. So, but to answer your question, I don't know. But I thought, Tennessee Tech was not very good. But I thought Hooker did some good things in that game. He looked more decisive. When he decided to run, he ran. It wasn't, right, you know, what we used to call the old flattened squirrel. Yeah. You know, the old flattened squirrel. Right. Squirrel gets out in the road and you start, am I going or am I staying? And then he gets run over, right?
Well, that's why he made some mistakes, but he looked more safe. He's more to my type of quarterback, really, when I was watching him. I just felt like he ran the offense better. There's a couple things I want to ask you, though, and that is, you know, when you're trying to decide if one kid has more upside, and we're talking about a four-year guy now, and he has upside, when does you get to a point as a coach you say, upside is out the window, he is who he is? When do you get to that point as a coach?
I think you have to see him a while, but that is a good question on Milton. You know, the question I think every Tennessee fan has, you don't have to be a coach to know this, can he throw the deep pass? He has not shown he can do it. I kind of joked on Big Orange Sunday a few weeks ago, you know, this isn't punt, pass, and kick.
Right.
You don't get points for how far you can throw the football. Don't know if he can do that or not. One thing that both of them have to do, though, Blaine, Tennessee's had 6 turnovers in 3 ball games. Mm-hmm. All 6 of them have been by the quarterback position. I think Hooker's had 4 of them. So, you'll never hear me say you can't win and have turnovers, because you're going to have turnovers. But 5 of those 6 turnovers have been fumbles by the quarterback. Mm. Just one's been an interception. You got to hold on to the ball, which is, you know, difficult to do sometimes.
Mm. We're on with the coach. Coach Doug Matthews.
That's right, Doug Matthews, brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. On average, a DUI can set you back $10,000. It can also cost your life. Remember, fans, don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. You can also catch the Coach Football Saturday, Big Orange Sunday, right here on The Zone. Saw some good news today involving Cooper Mays. Looks like the offensive line will get him back. And, Florida always has some guys who can terrorize you on their front. So, a healthier offensive line for the Tennessee Vols is really good news, especially this week.
I was really a little surprised at how good Florida looked defensively, particularly on the defensive front against Alabama. They got a couple of really, really big-time players up there, it looked like, in that one ball game. And Tennessee getting Cooper Mays back is almost a must, because what's happened is, you know, Calbert, they went into this season with 6, maybe 7 good offensive linemen. Calbert got hurt early. He's out for the season. And when Cooper Mays got hurt, that made them move. Their backup center was Carvin, mm-hmm, who moved to center. Well, he is a natural guard. Center's a different position. And then they had to start moving some guys around. But if they can line up with Cade Mays and Wright at tackle and Spraggins and Carvin at guard and Cooper Mays at center, that is a good starting 5. Not going to have much depth there, right, but that's what they have to go with right now. Cooper Mays not a great player. He's just a sophomore getting better, but he's a good player. But more importantly, let's Carvin move out to that natural guard position.
We've talked a lot about just the emotions Florida went through, because it looked like they were going to get blown out. Then they came back, and, I mean, a 2-point conversion that doesn't go the right way, and apparently somebody was lined up wrong. It was the right call, but a guy in the wrong place, so they literally could have tied that game with about 3 minutes left. If you're Tennessee, is this maybe emotionally a good time to play Florida, and even physically, because Bama beats on you?
Well, I guarantee you it is physically. Listen, I played at 4 different places I coached. Played Alabama 14 times, 10 of them at Tennessee. And I'll just speak from the Tennessee position. No matter whether we won or lost at Tennessee, the next week, and it was normally Georgia Tech, we had a tough time. And Georgia Tech wasn't really good back then. They beat us 2 or 3 times. Mm-hmm. Florida will go through that. You know, one thing I did want to mention, though, and this is just what I see in this league. There's 2 teams in this league, maybe 3, but 2 teams in this league that don't let Alabama – the aura of Alabama affect them? Auburn's one, and Florida's the other. I think Georgia's does somewhat. And, of course, Georgia and Florida don't play them all the time. But listen, you could tell in that ballgame, Florida had no fear of playing Alabama. And you're right. They got behind significantly and came back and had a 1.5-yard, 2-point play to win, but to at least go into overtime.
Right.
So, but they don't fear them. And I think other teams do, quite frankly.
Coach Doug Matthews, our guest here on Blaine and Mickey, talking Tennessee Vols, Florida Gators ahead of Gators game.
When I was watching the game, you know, last week, it really made me look at Hooker. Did it seem like he runs the offense at maybe a slower clip than Milton? And does that help or hurt going against Florida when you're in the swamp, the noise? Because you can get to a point where you're doing the no huddle and then you're doing 3 and out real quickly now. 30 seconds go by. You ran 10 seconds off the clock for each play. I mean, the next you know, you're running them. And then if you don't get a first down and you're limited to just passing the football and you're not completing them, that's going to put your defense. They're going to be out there like a dog with his tongue out. Like, hey man, I got to get some first downs.
One of the things that I'm sure Coach Heupel's looked at, Tennessee is essentially somewhere about 10 minutes per game behind in total time of possession. They're like 20, maybe 6, 25 to 35. So they're behind on that. And the other thing that, again, this will be the first time that these players, remember last year, no crowds, right?
Right. Right.
This will be the first time they play 3 home ball games. They're going to now have on the road that this will be a loud crowd. But the plus on that, Blaine, and this is something that you know, and when I was coaching defense, you used to really like. The good thing is, though, on offense, it really affects you. It could affect you. But defensively, because the home team is on offense, you can make all your checks and calls because the crowd's not loud. That's the one plus that you get. So you can communicate defensively. Offensively, they're going to have to do a lot of it just by silent count, only way they can handle it.
I have to ask you about the scheduling. I know they changed from playing Army to Akron. Tell me the good and the bad, if you have either side of this, of why that happened.
I'll tell you my guess.
But I know they don't want to play the option, read option. You don't want to prepare for that.
I don't think it's the option, Blaine, as much as it is this. All three of those academies, they cut block. You know, they got smaller linemen, they're down in all fours, and they cut block, and I think that had as much to do with it as anything else. I really do. And I can understand that. Now, I don't know who went to where. I don't know. I don't know if that was Coach Heupel. You know, they're paying $500,000 to do it.
Right, as I'm saying.
But I think that's what it is more than anything else. Those you don't work on that except that 1 week. And they get down there. That's the only block now in college football. The only block that you can make below the waist is in the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And nobody does that except the academies and the teams that run the option look on it. And it's different. As you know, you're used to taking offensive linemen on up high. And it is a different technique to get those hands down. You got to play their head into the ground. I coached defense several years against the wishbone teams. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the difficult things you have to do against them. You have to get your hand, it's a complete different attack mm-hmm. from your defensive folks. You got to get your hat on their hands on their hat instead of underneath their shoulder pad. So I don't know if that's what it was, but it would make sense for me to do it.
Coach. You got me all excited thinking about Larry Lacewell's wishbone teams at Arkansas State in the 80s that used to run for, you know, 400 and 500 yards regularly. 400 and 500 yards. Crazy.
Lacewell knew how to defend it because he coached the other side of it.
He did. And I think that's why he thought, well, shoot, nobody can prepare for it except me. I'll just run it against everybody.
We could tell Lacewell stories. When I left Tennessee in 1989, Larry came in and was the defense coordinator.
Right.
Called me, and we had some good conversations after that. He was a tremendous, tremendous assistant coach. He was all those Switzer wishbone teams.
Yeah.
The backbone of those teams were not good defense, great defense by the University of Oklahoma.
Sure was. Larry Lacewell, also scouting director for the Cowboys, 3 Super Bowl teams.
Yep.
Yeah, Google him, kids.
Bad shape now.
Yeah, he's not doing well.
But he was part of that. Any of those guys that were part of the old Arkansas teams. They're a lot of fun to be around. There's a bunch of them out there too, by the way.
Okay, Lucas is going to yell at us, but I have to tell you this before we leave. Lacewell, and Tennessee people who of a certain age know who Larry Lacewell is. He's also a legend at Arkansas State. He carried around for years. He's not doing well now. A Crown Royal bag full of Super Bowl rings, SEC rings, Sugar Bowl rings. He had just bagged Big Eight rings. He had all these rings, national championship, and he would take out his SEC championship rings from Tennessee every time he did a speaking engagement in Jonesboro, and he would say, yeah, I wanted the Hog fans to see what SEC championship ring looked like, so I brought them with me again tonight. Like, he would giggle every time. You did not miss it, Coach Lacewell. Yeah, we could do this forever.
He's the most unlikely football coach you'd ever see. He's probably 5'4". Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, really, about 5'4".
From Fordyce, Arkansas, friends of Bear
Bryant.
Had a
bad eye. Had a bad eye.
Blind in one eye.
And, but he was a heck of a head coach. Real quick, Lucas can holler at me since you guys. Bobby Proctor, who people have heard on my show, was a secondary coach at Oklahoma with him. He told me, and Coach Proctor was around a lot of really top coaches. He said Larry Lacewell was the very, very best game day play caller and making adjustments of anybody he has ever. And that's a skill.
Yeah.
That's a skill to be able to adjust during the ball game. He said he was outstanding at it. And if Bobby Proctor said it, I believe it.
I believe it, too. I know Coach Lacewell very well. Always great stuff, Coach Matthews. We can talk football. We can tell stories. This segment goes too fast.
See you next week.
Tennessee Highway Safety Office making it happen. Fans, don't let fans drive drunk. We're back to wrap up Lady Mickey after this.
You got live here or anything? I'll tell you a true story. I knew Lacewell really well because –
Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. If you're watching on the TV, Coach Matthews is still in here. We're still telling stories.
Yeah,
it's hard to let him go because he's got every bit of the stories. We can't just say, okay, stop telling his stories.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man, I had some of the best laughs there. That was awesome.
All you Tennessee fans, you need if you see Coach Matthews somewhere, you just need to stop spending about, well, you're going to say 5 minutes. You're going to spend about an hour and 5 minutes with him. Because that dude has stories about all your favorite players. Well, he coached them. He's got stories about all those guys. They're just fantastic.
Yeah, we went down the list from Harper to Pickens to Dale Carter.
Chuck Webb.
I mean, the whole list.
Think about all these people, too. And he's just saying their names like, oh, yeah, we're talking about the 1990 team. He's like, yeah, Dale Carter, Carl Pickens, Chuck Webb. He's just dropping.
That's what he said, yeah.
He's just dropping all-time great names. He's just saying these names one after the other of just some of the most unbelievable. And he said, and everybody says this about Chuck Webb, Blaine, he may have been the most talented of all of them. He just got robbed out of injuries.
Yeah, he said he got injured, hurt his knee. That was it.
We talked a lot about Nyheim Hines today. So I thought in the last break I looked up, this is what he's done in the last two games of time. Because we were talking about this in the commercial break. Okay, who's even left at safety? Like what?
Yeah. And I want to put a special package in for him.
Because your thing was, okay, if you're the Titans, what do you do with this guy? How do you attack him? Well, the safeties are Kevin Byard, Dane Cruikshank, Matthias Farley are the three guys who are safeties because they cut Bradley McDougal. So the other two guys you got to work with who are just listed, now look, they're not listed as cornerbacks. They're listed as defensive backs on the Titans roster would be Chris Jackson and Elijah Molden. So how might those guys – possibly figure in because here's the stats in the last two games, 22 carries, 99 yards and a touchdown, 13 receptions, 111 more yards and a touchdown. That's what he did last year against the Titans in two games. Nyheim Hines.
I would have a special package. I'd use a safety, maybe Molden or another backup, guy that can run and play the run front because that's what they'll do. They'll see a DB. They check straight to run, run him in. And if they motion him out to get out there wide and run some routes like a receiver. Guess who you got out there? Got Molden on. Yeah, because Jackson's already on the slot, so I'm assuming that's where he'll be since that's where he finished the last game. He's a special little player. You have to address him. You got to have a package for him, especially if he gets out of control. Yeah, and he typically does. Does well against the Titans.
He does. That was stats for two games last year, and he seems to be getting better and better against him. I wanted to ask you this, and we got like a minute left. Elijah Molden, as you watched him last week, a lot of people are talking about the long pass play where it was he and McDougal?
Yes.
And it was a 63-yard pass play. Receiver runs away from Lockett. What did you see with Molden in the game? Because we liked what we saw of him in the preseason. What are you seeing of him through the first two games?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say, you know. I'm really not a big proponent. Again, you know, it's NFL. You know, they yanked him. I don't know what he did absolutely wrong. I don't know the coverages. You can't see that all on the TV copy. But I know once you saw him get in a foot race and the guy has a step on him, that guy pulled away.
Yeah.
That guy pretty fast. He was growing away from a lot of people. Which is Lockett. Yeah. So, you got to live and learn and what you can and can't do and what you can get away with. You must understand your strengths and your weaknesses. So if you're not a deep end runner, when I say deep end runner, and I was kind of that guy too, after, 30 yards, I'm already at top speed. I'm not getting any faster. Well, some of these guys, when the ball gets in the air, all of a sudden you see them downshift to another gear. You go, what? Yeah. He got faster?
Yeah.
So you better learn how to hold or get a hold of them on the line to slow them down and let them know, I'm going to take you down to my speed now. We're going to downshift right now, and I can run with you because I know I got this pressure coming after that quarterback, and it's a hot potato. He got to get rid of it, and by the time then, I'm done holding you, and I can run with you for 30 yards.
All right, this show's a hot potato. We got to get rid of it. Get it to 3HL. They're coming up next here on The Zone. We'll see y'all tomorrow.
Happy Thursday, and as always, peace!